Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. When thinking about equity, diversity, and inclusion policies, it is often associated with addressing issues around race, gender, sexual orientation, and so on. In this interview, Port Hope counselors Claire Holloway Wadwani and Todd Attridge will tell you it is about much more. They want to ensure rural residents are treated equally. It is also about recognizing the diversity within the community by including those who are not heard with those who speak out loudly and often. And it addresses all the other concerns most people recognize as well. Have a listen and see if you agree with Council's new policy as they explain the background, its passage, and how it will work in the future. I'm so pleased to have with me today Claire Holloway Wadwani and Todd Attridge. Welcome both to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you for having us.
Who came up with the idea to create a DEI policy?
Well, I actually was the first one to raise it. Now we look at it as an EDI policy of equity, diversity, and inclusivity. And there's some nuances to that. And then Claire and I got talking about it, and it came forward really from the idea that, you know, as government creating policies and procedures and bylaws, we should be looking at the population in as little bias or with as little bias as possible, and being able to make sure that everyone's voice is being considered when these policies and procedures and bylaws are being created.
Todd, was there any evidence of inequality or mistreatment of employees or the public that spurred this on?
Yeah, no, this isn't a reactive procedure, right, or coming forward with this this policy. This is just good practice. You know, knowing that as humans we have bias, that's just inherent in our nature. Whenever policies and procedures and bylaws are made, they're often made from a singular lens. So this is just good practice in any body, whether it's government or, quite frankly, it happens to be within, you know, business or any other committee.
And if I could pick up on that as well, it's less about whether there has been harm. It's more about, are we actually hearing from diverse voices and thinking about the diverse needs of community members when we're at the policymaking table? There can be a tendency in government to listen to the voices that engage most loudly, right? Or those that are closest to us, or based on what we've seen done before. And if we're not proactively asking questions around who is our community, what are their interests, who's most impacted by these decisions, then we lose out on the opportunity to develop the strongest possible policies and programs in service of that community.
Claire, what brought you on board to this initiative?
I didn't need much convincing. You know, when Todd approached me with this, I said, where can I sign? Was very happy to be the seconder and work with him to bring this forward. I think it was one of a number of things that I felt were missing from our suite of policies and approaches within the municipality. I applauded his leadership in bringing it forward so early in the term, really. And I think it's, it was timely. It was a gap, I think, that I also recognized existed in our policy suite.
It's interesting you said it was early in the term, because other municipalities, including Northumberland County, have introduced policies and protections before this. Mm-hmm. Why did it take Port Hope so long?
Yeah, I don't know if I could speak to that, Robert. Like I can't speak for previous councils, but recognizing that when we took office, there was a gap, and so we were looking to fill that gap.
Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of timeline, I do think it's important to know when I say it came forward early in our term. Obviously, the adoption of the final policy and framework did not take place early in our term. That's only taken place in the last month or two, in the first quarter of this year. But the resolution to commission that body of work was brought forward by Todd and then seconded by myself in June of 2023. So within the first 6 months, really, of this term of council.
Todd, we often hear about social and structural factors that contribute to barriers to equality and inclusion. Yeah. What are some of the social and structural factors in Port Hope that you think have created barriers or might have created barriers?
Yeah, well, I think, as I was saying earlier, Robert, as humans, we have inherent bias, right? And when we make rules or policies and procedures, we have a tendency to look at them through our own lived experiences, through our own eyes. And it's not unusual for humans to make these policies based on what they think is fair and just based on their own lived experience, mm-hmm. not recognizing that it may not be fair and just for everybody else. And so when you end up having a group of people who have a similar lens to things, you do tend to end up having these policies, procedures, and bylaws created through a same lens, right? A really homogenous lens. And so those factors can be all sorts of things. Like they can be around socioeconomics and people's incomes. It can be around people's accessibility, mobility. It can be around people's language and language barriers. It can be around race. It can be around gender. It can be around sexual orientation. So, as you can imagine, if you get let's use an extreme example. You get a small group of five people who are all of the same background, you've got middle-aged, white, male, this kind of background, typically you would end up with a product that is through that lens, but it doesn't necessarily take in the other lenses. So there's lots of factors that play into it. This gives voice and consideration to all the things that are not the people who are making the policy.
Mm-hmm. And can I add to that list? I think one that's really particularly important here in Port Hope is geography. One of the most significant or the loudest conversation or most frequent conversation we have about equitable representation and equitable voice and equitable meeting of interests is between the urban and rural, where we live within our community. And all of these pieces really impact the way not only we are impacted by policy, but the way we also access and benefit from municipal services and programs. And I would add as well, I'm conscious of in municipal government, we have a professionalized staff, many of whom have very rich careers in municipal government where they move from community to community over time as they move through their careers and bringing with them, tremendous wealth of experience and knowledge that they've gained throughout that career, but really making sure that knowledge is also grounded in the local context and in the specific needs and interests of the community that is Port Hope. I see this kind of policy and the framework, especially, and I hope we can speak to that a little bit as well, as being tremendously important to make sure that we're testing what we see as good practices from elsewhere, against the context here. Is this going to align with the specific interests of the diversity that exists in this community? And this policy, I think, moves us closer to being able to do that in a systematic and regular and just kind of part of our regular cadence of how we make decisions.
Well, let me pick up on that, because I think you've mentioned something important, and that is, what is the anti-oppression framework that is the basis of this policy?
Yeah. Claire, do you want to explain that?
So, essentially, I think that was really a crucial part of the motion, and I give full credit to Todd for making sure that that was front and center in the original motion. And what we've now got is a policy that is not at risk of sitting on a shelf and collecting dust, or only being pulled out, say, in the case of a complaint or an issue that arises. But rather, we have this framework that's been broken down to 10 questions, essentially, that we are now required to ask as we're bringing forward a new policy idea or developing a new program. And as we work through those 10 questions, it just pushes our thinking, and it could make us pause and say, hey, you know, there's some voices we haven't heard from that we really need to go and consult with before we move forward. My favorite question is the piece around who's most impacted and have they been engaged? And I think that one, you know, even on its own, is going to have tremendous value to making sure that we're really considering who's going to be impacted by these decisions and ensuring that we're considering their needs and interests as we're making those decisions.
Claire, can you walk us through the process? You mentioned that this was brought forward very early in the term, but it's just got passed in the last few months. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through that whole process and the timeline of how this came about and the various steps that got us here?
Absolutely. And if I can sort of, you know, I guess, situate that question or my answer to that question in a little bit of a broader context around, you know, the role of municipalities. And I think this and so many of the issues that we're grappling with right now as municipalities are things that we hadn't been challenged to address or take on, 20, 30 years ago or traditionally at the municipal level. So this was an example, I think, of a piece of work that was not in the wheelhouse or with a high degree of confidence in the staff team who were then charged with implementing that policy direction. So it did take a little bit of time to sort of figure out how they were going to move this forward. And I think especially the framework piece was the piece that they were unsure, like writing a policy is one thing, but thinking through that operational framework side was a little bit more complex. So there was, it was eventually determined that we would need to bring in some outside expertise to help with that. Unfortunately, my understanding is that that was not considered in time for the development of the subsequent year's budget, and therefore didn't get put into the budget until I think close to a year and a half after the original resolution. I will say in defense of the staff team, you know, I don't think it was that they weren't trying to move it forward. There was a lot of turnover. We've had almost a rotating chair when it comes to the CAO's role, as you're aware, in this term of council. But once the budget was established and we were able to tap into that outside expertise, it was really, I think, staff and senior leadership team really ensuring that they were going through the process in a way where everybody was really getting educated and thinking about it and getting on board with thinking through how it was going to work and what the implications were going to be. You know, I'll admit it took longer than I would have liked to see it take. But at the end of the day, you know, we do have, I think, a really strong policy, but accompanied by a real strategy for how we operationalize that policy and framework. In fact, it's already been integrated into the staff report template, for example. So the requirement to use that framework and to speak to what thinking has resulted from the use of that framework is now going to be coming forward in staff reports as new policies or programs are proposed to the council.
Todd. Could I add something to that, Robert? Because yes, it took longer than I think any of us would have liked. But what I would say is I value the time that we took, because I think the end result is much richer than it would have been had we pushed it forward fast.
With that in mind, then, when the draft came forward, the final draft came forward a few months ago, and council was looking at it, Todd, what were some of the feedback that was given?
Yeah, there were actually, for me, it was two, Robert. One was that language that I talked about, right? The shall and must language was really important. When it actually came forward, the first draft was softer language. It was around should and could. And, so it really talked about, hey, there's a best practice to this, is what it was trying to say. My concern with that is, no, we actually need to enshrine this. It has to be a shall, must, this is the way it's going to be. So that was one. The other thing that when the first draft came back that I was concerned about was there was little written about how the community can engage with it, specifically around, you know, so obviously we're looking at this from, you know, from this point forward, right? All the things coming forward need to adopt the strategy and the framework. But the truth of the matter is, we also have a long history. There are policies, procedures, bylaws that have already been made that may be disadvantaging community members. And so it was important to me that there was something built into it where if a community member or a staff member or a committee member or a council member looked at something that's already been built and said, hey, listen, I actually don't think that meets the, you know, the framework as we have it today, we have a process in place whereby you can raise that. It goes through a vetting system to see whether it matches the framework or holds up to the framework of today. And if it doesn't, a process by which it gets changed. And so that then gives us the opportunity to always go back and look at the systems that were put into play and make sure that they're revised for what we see as, you know, being just today.
How would you respond to that, Claire?
I think one of the things I also remember being talked about at the council table was, well, first, what we got back the first was the strategy and framework without the policy. So, you know, there was a bit of a conversation. We appreciated that coming forward, but, you know, ensuring that we were all on the same page, that there would also be an accompanying policy. And credit to staff, our new, you know, in-house municipal solicitor was able to turn that policy around very quickly because we had that robust framework already established. And I think the other piece that I thought was really important, and I think we have established very clearly now, is that it's not just about staff, right? We are also holding ourselves and every body that makes up sort of the municipal decision-making structure is also held to the same standard. So whether that's members of council being asked to consider that framework when we're bringing forward notices of motion with council-initiated business, or most recently, I had an opportunity to go through the process with the Environmental Advisory Committee as we're revising our terms of reference for the committee work. So we also put our own work through that framework as well before, you know, finalizing that to come forward to council. So it's really going to be the municipality as a whole and not just staff. And that was another real, I think, important point of clarity that came out of the council table discussion.
Who in the municipality is going to have the oversight to make sure that this gets done and that a new council just doesn't come in and go, listen, this is, you know, we're just not going to worry about this because it's not what we care about?
You know, that sits with the CAO ultimately. The CAO is responsible for all the ongoings and business of the municipality. So it sits at that seat. But as things, and as, you know, Claire pointed out earlier, you know, already staff reports have adopted sections on it. So what we're going to see, Robert, is over time, over the next few years, it's going to not stand in a silo where it's a, hey, here's a thing that we've got to do. This will have tentacles through all of the policies and procedures that we have. So it'll be integrated and woven into everything. And so, you know, to your point about, wow, we're just not going to do it, that option will disappear because it's just going to be woven into the fabric of everything we do.
I really appreciate the sincere nature of your statements, but people are human beings. We're, as you mentioned earlier, we're going to be going into a municipal election and a new council could come in. Claire, do you worry that maybe a council will come in and just brush this aside as has happened in other places, other levels of government, other companies and institutions across Canada and the world?
Well, I think, you know, Todd and I know very well that it is entirely possible for a new council to come in, revisit a decision of the previous council. Todd and I did that ourselves. We were the two names on a notice of motion early in our term that did that very thing on a different decision. But I think, you know, to be clear, you know, a new council coming in, if they wanted to deprioritize this, they would have to, you know, bring forward a resolution and vote to rescind that policy. The challenge being there, we also have a strategic plan with inclusion and community, an inclusive community highlighted as an explicit goal within our strategic plan. I don't think the concept that diverse community members with different interests based on all these different factors around our experiences should be considered. I don't think it's going out the window totally, even if a policy itself were to be rescinded. If it had come forward earlier in the term, I would feel even more confident of that, because I think once people start actually thinking through how it's impacting their work, This is not an onus. This is not a burden to do. It actually helps us do better work. And yeah. I think we have an excellent staff team who genuinely want to be doing the absolute best they can for our community. And once they start using this tool and see how it causes them to ask better questions or think about something they might otherwise missed and do better work, people don't let go of that, right? So even if it's not required by a matter of policy.
Todd, there are some academics who are suggesting that there is a broader trend in Canada towards polarization. Mm-hmm. Does this kind of policy fuel this?
No, I don't think so. This kind of policy actually brings voices back together. So maybe jumping off a little bit, Robert, from the last question, there may be people who push back on policies like this or EDI policies, but I can guarantee you there is no one who has never felt at some point everything was stacked against them, mm-hmm. right? Or felt as though this just isn't fair to me. And so I think as far as the question of polarization, I think without this framework, without this structure, we feel polarized because you have an advantage that I don't. That thinking polarizes us. Mm-hmm. But to be able to pull people together and say, listen, what is it that we need to be able to do to make sure that, everyone has a chance to win and get what they need. Everyone has a chance to be able to get that same outcome. That can pull people back in together again, instead of looking at it as you have something I don't have.
I have a question I want both of you to answer. If you were talking to someone on the street and they were uneasy about this new policy, what would you tell them to assure them they don't need to be concerned? And I'll start with you, Claire.
Well, I think, to be honest, my answer would depend on what their concerns were. So, my first response would be to ask them questions. So what is it that makes you uneasy about it? What are the fears that you have about what this might mean? And I would try to explain it, based on that particular concern. But I think, if I pick up a little bit on what I was saying just now is, when people have concerns, my sense is there's the general trend, as Todd pointed out, that it's about, is this going to mean somebody else is considered at my expense? Does it mean that we're going to be talking about something that's not relevant to me? And assuring people it's actually about making sure that we're considering everyone when we think about what's relevant. It's not about excluding anyone. It's about making sure that everyone's needs and interests are considered, including the folks that are concerned. So, about this particular policy and the outcome for them. So I think that's sort of how I would approach it, is figure out what matters most to them and sort of explaining how this policy will help us to navigate that issue in an equitable way so that they are part of that process and they feel heard and they feel represented in those decisions.
Todd, what would you say?
Yeah, I would agree with what Claire said. I would also ask the questions because if someone says they're uneasy with it, we really need to understand what you're uneasy with. And in my experience, Robert, in this work, whenever people are uneasy with things around equity, it's coming from a place of feeling that they're going to lose something. Mm-hmm. And this is not about losing. It's not about I'm going to take from and give to. It's not about a winner and a loser. It's that myth has to go away. It's about finding out what is it that we need to be able to give people so that they have equal opportunity for the outcome. And as long as we're staying focused on the outcome, recognizing that not everyone has the same starting place, but we're trying to get you to the same ending place. And so as long as we can, you know, make people feel comfortable with the fact that it's not about you losing stuff for someone else to gain, it's about helping them gain in ways that give them the same opportunities as you have.
Mm-hmm. Right at the outset of the interview, Todd did clarify that our policy is EDI. And I know it's the same three letters, but the order of those letters in terms of EDI versus DEI, I think is important. And I find that's actually a helpful starting point too for conversations if there are concerns, because the emphasis here is on equity. Right. It's about equity. And that is universal. That means all of us benefiting equitably from our municipal government. And so I just wanted to highlight that, because I think that was intentional in our choice of which acronym we're going to use as we move this forward.
Claire Holloway Wadhwani, Todd Attridge, I want to thank you both for talking to me today.
Thank you very
much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.